you from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode recording. Today, in this particular episode, we'll be recording episode 163 on the channel, and I want to thank everybody who joined me today. I was telling our guest of honor today, we'll let her introduce herself in a second. I've done six episodes this morning and today throughout the day, and this is number seven. I really appreciate the time that the guests put into this to prepare, to be here, to have a discussion, to have a conversation. Again, it's an easy conversation, as everybody knows, the style of this podcast. But still, there's a lot of preparation that goes into it. I hope you guys appreciate what we're bringing you here from a thought leadership, from a conversation that interesting to many of our audience. And our audience, by the way, continues to grow. I'm happy to report for the past 7 days, we're averaging 2.5 million views. And we are averaging close to 1,500 downloads per day on all streaming channels. So I want to appreciate all the listeners from 49 different countries around the world for tuning in and keeping us on your AirPods or whatever you listen to us on. I heard some people listen to this podcast while at the gym. I envy you for doing that. I need hard rock music to keep me going. But if you can listen to this podcast in the gym, I love you and I appreciate you. Thank you. It is my distinct pleasure and honor to welcome to the conversation this evening, Deb Creer. I can't wait to get to know you, Deb. Welcome to the conversation.
Well, Robin, thank you so much. It is my honor to be here. I am so impressed with your program, with you. I've been a podcaster for many, many, many years, and what you are doing is absolutely phenomenal.
I really appreciate it. And coming from somebody with such an experience, it's a great compliment. Thank you for such a kind words. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining the conversation this evening. As we do on this channel, Deb, the first question we get started with, I think you consider it an icebreaker or a warm-up. Everybody has a story. You know, everybody comes in with various types of stories that you can imagine. What is your story? What got you here, if you don't mind sharing?
You know, I have had quite the journey. I grew up in the mountains of Colorado, a little over 8,000 feet. And closest big tent, I tell people, you know, when we went grocery shopping, it was 65 miles in a different state. We had to go to Wyoming in order to do that. So I think probably a lot of that is what created who I am. Very independent. I am an only child. My parents could only stand one of me. So, you know, it was great. I had a whopping graduating class of 32. 32. And we won't say when that was, but it was a while ago. And, you know, I really was raised to be very independent and to have a great time, you know, being able to do a lot of things on our own, you know, because there weren't the things that were very close. So we did have to be very independent. I initially went to college in Kansas because it was a ways away, but not too far. But then I ended up back in Colorado and was there for quite a long time. I had several different jobs, started my own company there, Wise Women Communications, met my husband and was married there. And then in 2012, his company said, move to Atlanta or lose your job. And it didn't take too long for us to go, okay, we're going to go to Atlanta. But we don't have kids, so it wasn't a matter of moving them. We did have to move the dogs and the cats, and so that was an experience. But, you know, came down here, embedded myself in the world here. I use LinkedIn extensively to reach out to people to connect before I'd ever even moved. You know, really had a good time with that. Got here, was doing really good, was the good kid that went for my annual checkups, and I had a mammogram that came back with something wrong. I wasn't even home from the hospital when they called and said, hey, you need to come back. And so that kind of started me on a totally different journey, one that I had obviously never intended to go on. And many years ago, I worked for an oncologist, a cancer specialist, and I worked for the American Cancer Society. So I know just enough to be dangerous, right? When they start floating those terms around, I know what those terms mean. And so eventually, what I was diagnosed with was stage 4 triple positive metastatic breast cancer. That's not good, you know, because stage 4 is not considered curable. Now I can go away and bless its little heart. See, I live in the South now. Bless its little heart. It has stayed hidden and inactive for over 10 years, which is a very good thing. But I had several complications, multiple along the way, and almost died several times. My husband was told I was not going to make it. And I remember going, I get to vote. Excuse me. And most of the time I still worked. You know, I own my own business, and hospitals and doctor's offices have very good Wi-Fi. So I kept working along the way, had more surgeries, more complications, but yeah, you just keep going, right? I'm the little Energizer bunny. Two more cancer diagnoses followed. One was pretty simple, basic skin cancer. It's called basal cell carcinoma, which sounds horrible, but it's your basic skin cancer. So they took care of it. I didn't even have a stitch. It was very easy. But then 2 years ago, I got thyroid cancer. And so I've had three totally separate cancers. But yeah, kept working, kept going. But then I decided, at the behest or nudging, pushing from my business coach, to use what I had gone through to help others. And so I started something called tryingnottodie.live. And it is to help anyone on a cancer journey. And now I am an integrative cancer coach. So I work with executives who are told they have cancer. I told you it's right bumpy. Now?
I know, but is that your full-time now? Is that what you're
doing? It is not. My full-time job, and the one that pays the bills still, is Wise Women Communications. So my marketing firm.
Your marketing firm?
Yeah. Yeah.
There are, funny you mentioned what Wise Women, the communication agency that you have, is because there is an individual who I consider a friend of mine who started something along the lines of educating women, et cetera. It's an organization that they're pulling together. Maybe after the call, what I'll do is I'll facilitate an introduction.
Yes,
maybe you can.
That'd be lovely. Thank you.
Yeah. The journey you've been on, such a resilient story of a journey. And you reminded me of a podcast that was not too long ago. I think in last month I did a podcast with a lady out of Colombia, I believe. But she ended up, I think, in Atlanta. I think she was in Atlanta or Tampa. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. In the U.S. somewhere. Where her family diagnosed her. You can look up the podcast with her, but her family at a young age, she was a young kid, got diagnosed with something irregular in her heart, and they were not able to fix it. There was no technology to get it fixed at the time. So the family found out that there is a possibility to fix it in the U.S. So they packed everything, came to the U.S., came to a particular hospital they told them about, and they went to that hospital and said, "We don't treat kids here. You got to go to another hospital."
No.
So they go to another hospital and they treat that kid. Long story short, after a series of tries and surgeries and et cetera, she was in one of the surgeries, she was pronounced dead, sent to the morgue, woke up in the morgue and revived and set back and managed to keep her going until the new technology came in and was able to fix all that stuff. So she tells a very fascinating story. You remind me of that.
I will definitely look that up. Thank you.
Absolutely. And so on you go now, you're helping executives and you're helping people on their, as you mentioned, on their medical journey mm-hmm. when they're mm-hmm. faced with critical illness.
Right.
So most companies plan for market risk, financial mm-hmm. risk, mm-hmm. operational risk, almost none plan for,
right.
you know, CEO mortality.
Right.
You know,
or even
we're
long-term.
Not immortal, we're mortal beings, right?
So, right, right.
And illnesses and incapacitation of sort. I think it's a blind spot on a strategic level. It's a strategic negligence.
Right. And that's what I focus on. You know, I'm not the, we're going to help you through. No. I'm like, do you know how to delegate? Do you have a business continuity plan? And many don't. They, you know, they simply do not have any of that because they never thought they needed it, right? Business owners, senior executives, we're invincible.
Yeah,
those things are not going to happen to us. And of course, the big thing is when they're told they have a serious illness, whether it's cancer or something else, they think they can't tell anyone because people are going to think they can't do their job. And so what I talk to them about is, yes, you can. It is your option as to what you tell people. You don't have to tell anybody anything. If you don't, they will make it up. So
right.
You might want to control that narrative, right?
Yeah, the rumor mill.
Yes, yes. And you don't have to go into detail. You can just say, I'm going through something medically. I need your help. And your employees should say, what can we do? If they don't, then you got a different problem. But they can get through it. But the key is, how is their business going to survive it also? Do they need to have somebody step in and take over? Do they think, you know, my priorities have changed. I don't want to do this anymore. Can they really have other people do part, some, all of what they do? And that answer is usually yes.
That's right. And you know, you bring a very valid point where people are afraid of facing reality because they're worried about their job. That's such a silly thing. You know, when it comes to critical illness versus job, I don't know, the choice is pretty obvious, but for some reason, and I think in the US, the culture is a little different when it comes mm-hmm. to that.
Right. Right.
I find like in other countries are more at liberty to share because they have some sort of a system protection, if you will, like social safety nets, etc. They don't have to worry themselves too much with that stuff. In the U.S., it's a lot more competitive when it comes to, you know, these top positions and, you know, a lot of people are eyeing you out kind of thing.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Am I going to be replaced?
Yeah.
You know, and I think so many people here, especially at a senior level of management, their identity is their job, their company.
Well, you become married to it for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, and I see that on LinkedIn when, say, it's a CEO, you know, their LinkedIn profile, and you go to the about section, right? You've got a great about section. Somebody who is, their identity is tied up in their business. Their about section is about their company. It's not about them. You know, and it's like, no, there's company pages. There's, you know, but yeah, so it's how can we get them through this in a way that both they and possibly, you know, and hopefully their business will survive.
Now, lots of CEOs and lots of, you know, I want to call them CEOs, whatever, executives, people in positions of sort, they talk endlessly about resilience. You know, there's a fine, you know, balance between resilience and being vulnerable. Like you have to be vulnerable at some point and share with the world, you know, some news that probably the world doesn't want to hear or uncomfortable. How about that? And very few test the idea that when a CEO becomes the constraint, if you will, of that process, that's what, you know, basically drive the rumor mill and bunch of things. So I think that resilience thing, it contradicts the idea of I want to share, because I've been promoting that, you know, as a CEO, I've heard the word resilience all my life in the corporate world, unfortunately. And fortunately, I'm not in the corporate world anymore. I left it 4 months ago. But it was embedded into everything I hear. Resilience, resilience, resilience.
Right.
You know, I've been, you know, I go to the gym at 5 o'clock in the morning. I see my CEO there. He's, you know, and I feel like,
wow,
you know, I got to do more push-ups than he does. I got to lift more weight than he does. It's a competitive thing. But at the end of the day, when faced with these types of reality, biological realities, that we're all biological beings and we go through things, resilience seems to step aside for a bit. How do you adjust for that resilience versus what's going on?
Well, and I think, you know, from a business perspective, we want our businesses to be resilient. COVID was, you know, probably the biggest thing that taught us that was how is our business going to survive? You know, but it is a challenge. You know, I was looking through the news just yesterday, and all politics aside, you know, nothing, you know, the story was that President Trump, so he's off at something, had a new bruise on his hand.
Okay.
My thought was,
who did he punch? I have no idea.
I was like, so?
Yeah, what's
and I think there's so many times where we are looking for a negative. Is there something wrong?
Deb, as a human being, right. Like, I mean, look at what's going on around us. Mm-hmm. We report on the plane when it crashed. We never report on the plane landed safely.
I know. Or the pilot who that was his 1,000,000th mile that he flew or whatever, right? Yeah, we don't. So my background is I'm an old PR person, so public relations, right?
Yes.
And for years, we were told, if it bleeds, it leads. You know, people want that. And you know, look, you drive down the road, train wreck, bus crash, you look, right? Are we going to see something? And I don't want to see that, ew, right? But yeah, and I think that's one of the things that we are hopefully getting through is thinking about the positives. You know, how can we help people? How can we be grateful as opposed to how can we be looking for things that are wrong?
Now, when you went through this, you know, 3-4 different, I want to say massive, you know, for somebody else who would have been, you know, broke them, you must have like the character of a steel or platinum. I don't know what you got in there, but how did you manage all this? And how did you figure out, like, did it ever stop you of, you know, thinking that I'm no longer deserving of a CEO or a position of sort?
There were times where I thought, I can't do this. I just can't do this. And you always have the why me's. What did I do? What did I do to deserve this? Mm-hmm. You know, and you have those things. But it really was one of those things where I kept thinking, well, I can't let this get to me. I've got to go on. I didn't know what was coming next. But I thought, nope, this is not the end. And the really funny thing, and I have no idea where this came from. In my head, I have an image of myself at 97. Like I said, I have no idea where this came from. And so, you know, I have to get there. But, you know, you definitely learn a lot about yourself. And so many people tell me, oh, you're always so happy. You're always so upbeat. Well, I just don't show people when I'm not. My poor husband gets to deal with that, right? I had a little minor surgery a week ago to get over that. And then I caught a cold. So I've just been whiny for like 2 weeks, but it was so funny because I had a checkup today. This is one of those weeks. I had 5 medical appointments this week and had a checkup with my endocrinologist, who's the thyroid doctor. And he said, it's always so nice to see you because you're always so upbeat. My doctors know that if I come in and I'm not happy, 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 there's something wrong. And I tell people, don't ever ask me, people always, how are you doing? I will never say fine. To me, that's a 4-letter word. Because it's what you tell the person at Starbucks. It's what, all those things. And so I tell people I'm hunky-dory, and if I'm not hunky-dory, then there might be a problem. But
I heard hunky-dory for a while. Now you're bringing back to me.
I know. I think my grandma, I think that's a grandma word, right? But it is very much your attitude.
Correct.
But we also need
to... Are you a spiritual person? Like, is this some type of manifestation?
Some, yes. And now, do I go to church? No. And my mother passed away, so now I really don't go to church. I was one of those that went to church when she made me. Yeah. But there is something, right? And there's energy. There's all sorts of whatever it is. And part of it is the support that I get from others. And if somebody says they're praying for me, I think that's the greatest thing in the world. I am never, ever going to dissuade that because how do I know that's not working?
I know. I'm with you.
Right. But yeah, there is something I think that ties us all together that wants us to be the best that we can be, doesn't want us to suffer, but those things are still going to happen. And so it's how are we going to get through that?
Now, as you were going through this and as you advise others, I guess, in your business, who are on the precipice or going through it, or they are going through it. Does it ever feel like when you went through it, obviously you went through some sort of an inventory of what's urgent, what's not urgent, what's noise. Do you tally all this up? Do you advise for people like take all your tasks, tally them up and prioritize them? Is that what you went through? And then you redefine what's urgent, I'm guessing.
Right. And just like with any of this, right? You're going to figure out that the things you thought were urgent and are not. Yeah. I was having this conversation just yesterday with somebody because she has 4 kids. And we were talking about the fact that, for the most part, when we make a decision, whatever the decision is, nobody dies, and so we can fix it. We can do it over. We can do whatever. And I think that is a big part of this is to realize that very rarely am I going to make a decision, hopefully never, where it is catastrophic. So if I choose the wrong treatment's a little bit different, but there's lots of decisions I make that are not the right decisions. Well, oops.
Great. Right? It's not life and death anymore.
Right.
Now, in your experience, Deb, no, there are some from a company perspective and the vulnerability and the fragileness, I guess, of a CEO. Let's say CEO disappear in 90 days. How fragile these companies are, knowing that a lot of companies now are owned by private equity firms and everybody's buying everybody out there. I guess if you're a private ownership is different than private equity owned or shareholder owned, et cetera, or you publicly traded organization. I'm assuming in some cases they just parachute another CEO or some VP steps up and becomes a CEO. But in general, in your view, how fragile do you think or the reality of these companies?
I think many companies, unless, especially a big company, they're not going to be fragile because there's so many levels, so many layers of other management. It's the middle and small size companies where you don't have that big support system. I have my own business podcast. And so a lot of what we talk about is the fact that a lot of times small business owners think we have to do it all. So we don't delegate. We don't, now I might have somebody else do my taxes. But there are things that we think we have to do it all. And then when that is gone, you've got an issue. But none of us are irreplaceable. Even if we are the founder, the owner. Now, maybe it means the business shuts down. But it is important to go through and figure out just what it is that is done and what can be delegated, what doesn't need to be done anymore, all of those things.
Do you think from a people perspective, you know, the chief people officers or whatever they call them nowadays, or HR person, or I don't know what you want to call them. I could go for a joke right now, but I don't want to do that because listeners are HR people. So I love them all and they're dear friends of mine. But do you think we've overemphasizing that entire ownership, resilience, you know, we embed that in people, sometimes forgetting that these are human?
I think we do. I think we overemphasize it and we underemphasize things like empathy and compassion. When, and I think a lot of times we see those as feminine traits and, you know, they kind of are, but it's okay. We can have that. And I find it interesting when, say, a CEO can have empathy for an employee that has something going on, but then it doesn't go both ways. And then you toss in the various rules and regulations that you can, and you can't talk about this and blah, blah, and then it really gets complicated. And it really is complicated if you have, say, shareholders, how much, and then how much can you disclose? I mean, if you are, say, a Richard Branson and you get ill and you disclose it, is your stock going to tank? You know, and so that's where it does get very tricky and very lonely.
Are you aware of any, I never heard of it, but are you aware of any things like CEO insurance?
Yes.
Any contingencies?
Yeah, and so we have a thing here in the United States. So I, you know, I don't know if it's available elsewhere. It's called Key Man Insurance, and, you know, and companies can get it.
So, you know, not DEI kind of thing.
Key man, I know. Key people. Yeah. And it's been a while since I've been in corporate America, so it might have changed its name, right? Right. So key leader, that's it. That we'll use that term.
Of course.
And so the company pays for it. And so then the company is the beneficiary. So it cover and it, you know, you cover whoever you want, but it usually is president, CEO, CFO, you know, all of the C level folks. And you know, and it's excuse me to do things like, okay, say they keel over dead. And now you have to spend $100,000 in a search to find somebody new, or you have to hire somebody, you know, as a fractional, temporary, all of those things, then that insurance can help pay that cost.
Okay. Now, have you dealt with things like, you know, when you're advising your clients on things like how to avoid, for instance, ego, denials? Do you get into that? Misunderstanding and perhaps sometimes leadership responsibility? And
if somebody told me a
long ago, because I'm always known for hardworking. You know, I never stop, to be honest with you. And people tell me, like, how can you slow down? I didn't listen when the people tell me to slow down. But then they start using, like, hard sentences with me, hard statements with me. Mm-hmm. Like one thing, one person told me, you know, if you leave the company, it will continue to operate. You know that. You realize that, right?
So that's a blow.
24 hours later, they'll have somebody in your place, which is true. I mean, that's logical. I mean, the world's not going to stop because of me. But we've embedded that entire ownership, take things on your shoulder, treat it as your own. And we wore it with a, you know, badge of pride on our chest. I don't think, you know, this here, the avoidance is about ego and denial, and people feel like they're misunderstood sometimes.
Right. And we do like to think we are irreplaceable. We're the most important whatever that the company has, that your family has, all of those things. And sadly, we're not. Yeah. When we're gone, the world goes on. Now, is it a better place when we're in it? Hopefully. And I tell people, really think about that and think about what your priorities are. So do you want to be known for the 60-hour, 80-hour work weeks? Or do you want to be known for the fact that you raised 4 great kids? Whatever that is. And obviously, definition of success, things like that is very personal. But really, what do you want to be known for?
Yeah. Now, do you get into the succession planning?
Yes. If they want to, we can do things like that. But that comes into making them face their mortality.
And exactly. And not, we're going to go with this, because before you get to succession planning, there's a few myths that you probably have to clear out of the way. Like indispensable founder, there's no such thing.
Right. And like I said, you know, sometimes the company will fold. I mean, you know, it is so wrapped up around that person. But, you know, and it's not just that it's mortality. I spent 7 weeks in the hospital. My business did not function, but my business is me. you know, and so that was really no big deal. My podcast went on to best ofs, so that worked really pretty well. But we don't, you know, we never want to face our own mortality. You know, I mean, that's just.
That's what makes us a human.
Right, right. And so, and it's funny because I had a conversation where, and this was last year, about this time, planning for the future. What were your goals? And this was with a group that I am a part of. And I said, you know, it's actually kind of hard to plan for 5 and 10 year goals because I don't know that I will be here. I hope I am, but I also could get hit by a bus tomorrow. I mean, you know, and the people in the group, they didn't like that because I was going to manifest that I wouldn't be here in 5 or 10 years. And I said, no, I'm being realistic. Do I hope I need 20-year goals? Sure. But and so that's kind of where it gets a little sticky is knowing, you know, I told people, I said, you know, I have my expiration date probably got moved up, but I'm ignoring it.
And you know what? The best positive way to look at anything in life is, you know, like you hear things, statements like, and people don't, they hear it and they brush it off and they ignore it. You know, live for today, for instance. Live mm-hmm. for the moment.
Right.
You know, this is the, you know, great representation of what that means, to be honest. You know, I remember in my past job, I hardly take vacations. Everybody knows that. My wife got on my back and said, hey, Robin, we got to go on vacation. Mm-hmm. I'm sick and tired of the mm-hmm. Canadian winter. I got to go somewhere south.
You know, she wanted to be warm.
Okay, finally, mm-hmm. finally. Yeah, I mean, that's she deserves it. And after a while, I said, okay, well, let's do that. So I go on vacation. Immediately after I go on vacation, the executive team decided to get a hold of me. And I got on several phone calls and with them, and we were having like calls almost on a day-to-day mm-hmm. basis while I'm on vacation. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't take vacation that often, maybe once a right. week, once a year. And the conversation starts. Robin is enjoying his vacay in the sun. Basically, mm-hmm. they're rubbing it in, right? And mm-hmm. then I'm on vacation. I'm not in my office. Mm-hmm. Like, I work remotely. I don't go see anybody.
Right.
I never felt so bad about taking vacation in my life, to be honest with you. I'm thinking, mm-hmm. like, what's so right. bad about taking mm-hmm. vacation? No, mm-hmm. I'm feeling bad about it.
Right.
On top of that, I just paid a lot of money to go over there.
You know, and we need to be able to do that. And I am just as guilty. You know, I'm attached to my phone. I'm on vacation. I'm still checking email. I'm still doing whatever. But yeah, we need to take vacations. And that means that we have to trust the people we work with.
Absolutely. Now, you know, from your opinion, what's the cost of building a company that only works when the founder is fully present? I mean, there must be, like, I mean, we've seen it in mm-hmm. Microsoft. We've seen mm-hmm. it in big companies.
Right.
Where mm-hmm. the founder generally is mm-hmm. not the right guy to drive it forward. I mean, mm-hmm. that's beside right. any other illnesses or sickness mm-hmm. that's going on or any mm-hmm. other issues.
Right. Right.
You know, just at some point, the founder must realize, I'm not the guy who's going to be able to take it. I'm the idea person.
Right. Right.
I'm not the person
yeah.
probably going to take mm-hmm. it forward. Mm-hmm. Have right. you gone through these kind of conversations?
I haven't, but it's so interesting because things change, right? The markets change. Technology changes, right? AI is, of course, the big disruptor. And I know that you've spoken with folks about that. And it really is one of those where a wise business person is always doing succession planning and thinking, and now maybe they're passing it down to their kids, they're doing whatever it is, but they should be thinking, what is next? I really do want to go on a vacation. I remember I was talking to a CEO one time, and he has about 5,000 employees. I mean, he's got a fairly large company. And I loved what he said. He knew he was successful when he went on vacation for 2 weeks and nobody called and nobody emailed him. He said, I knew I had the perfect team of people. But how many of us could do that?
Mm-hmm. Nobody. I haven't heard anybody that does
it. Right. And of course, then the thought was, well, he is replaceable. Well, no, because he still is the idea man. He's still, and you know, but yeah, what could you go on vacation for a day and not look at emails, not get text messages or phone calls? Many of us can't do that.
Talk to me a little bit about protecting people from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
How do you advise on that?
It is, you know, I think the truth always comes out, you know, and I, you know, my background is also in corporate communications. And so we want to protect, we don't want people to feel bad. We don't, you know, and so that's part of why sometimes we don't talk about what we're going through. We don't want them to feel bad. But, you know, we can, you know, it's the opposite of the movie, right? We can handle the truth.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And oh God, yes.
Yes, yes, you know, and but said much more nicely, right?
That's right.
And I think what it shows is that we trust people. You know, and we trust them with that truth. Now, do you have to tell every single thing? No.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, when you determine what needs to be told and to who, it's okay to trust them with knowing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you come across a situation where silence does more damage than disclosure?
Because people make things up, right? It's like we were saying, you know, if say you have a CEO who starts coming in late every day and he's looking a little rough, right? But he doesn't tell anybody anything. The rumor mill has him drinking, has him, you know, all sorts of things. So, you know, and I mean, I've been there with, you know, when I was in corporate communications in, you know, large organizations where we were going through some mergers and acquisitions and we just didn't know. And so we didn't say. And so, of course, everybody made everything up. And I tell people, it really is okay to say, we don't know, but we'll tell you when we can.
And let's move a little bit to strategy. You talk about resilience as something built, not endured. What does it mean in practice?
You have to keep.
You went through it. You lived it.
And you just have to keep doing it. And there are times where I'm like, really? Again? You know, I mentioned that I had some surgery last week. Now, it's minor surgery. I had to have a tooth pulled, right? We've reached that age. You know, and so I had to have a tooth pulled. But my dentist went, oh no, I ain't touching you. So he sent me to the specialist, and the specialist tells me we're gonna have to do this under general anesthesia. I went, to pull a tooth? You're gonna knock me out to pull a tooth? And he said, well, I can do it under a local, but you won't like it. And he said, but is there a reason? I said, yeah. In 10 years, this will make the 34th time I will be under general anesthesia. My brain does not like it, but it's okay. So how am I going to get through it? The resilience on that is I'm going to exercise. I'm going to get out, you know, as much as I do. I'm a lazy slug, but I'm going to get fresh air. I'm going to eat. I'm going to sleep better. Do brain things, you know, not just sit and watch TV, do whatever. So, and sometimes it's little. You know, it's, you know, I'm going to do a crossword puzzle, but get my brain back going. And so what are the things that you can do to be resilient? And sometimes they're big, sometimes they're little, but they're continual. But there are times where I really am like, seriously, again?
Again. 34 times under a full anesthesia? God bless
Yeah,
you.
And some of them were short. I mean, like last week was 30 minutes, so not a big deal. One surgery I had was 7.5 hours. And the surgeon actually had to have somebody step in. He couldn't go any longer.
God bless you. I'm glad you're talking.
It kills a lot of brain cells.
I hear it's like drinking.
I know. You know, and then you toss in chemo. And so I just use that as an excuse for everything.
You know what? I love how you laugh about this. And that's an inspiration to everybody who are listening to this podcast right now. God bless you for where you are right now.
Thank you.
And I hope all of us who's listening to this, including myself, will keep you in our prayers. And
thank you.
We'll be thinking of you. Now, as you did your work, Try Not to Die, Dot Live, with various executives, has your views on leadership in general changed, specifically around the leadership durability? Have you discovered something that you probably did not know?
I think it is that we are all replaceable. And everything that we think is important, especially from a business perspective, probably isn't. But your friends, your family, that's what's important. What is that true legacy that you're going to leave? Mm. I tell people, I don't want my headstone to say, I wish I would have. So yeah, we travel, right? And we do things that maybe we should, maybe we shouldn't. But what are those things? My husband retired about 1.5 years ago, and I told him, I said, every week we're going to go do something, and shopping for groceries does not count. We're going to get out. We're going to do something. And part of that is mental, right? We're getting out. We're seeing people. We're, you know, not just sitting home. And so it is, you know, how can you keep going? But I think the other thing is that we all need to remember that when we're going through any of this, and I think this is maybe it comes back to your question about ego, things like that. We're awfully hard on ourselves. And we need to give ourselves the grace to feel bad, to feel angry. I'm angry about this, but give yourself the grace. It's okay. Just don't get stuck in the pity party.
I feel like, you know, and I'm just in this, since the conversation has started together, Deb, that I felt like humanity have built this image, this polished image, mm-hmm. of everybody around us, you know, friends, families, coworkers, you know, boss, subordinates, etc. And that image has to be flawless.
Right.
Now, you mentioned something very interesting, that you put on, you know, the happy face to the outside world, mm-hmm. and your husband has right. to deal with mm-hmm. the uncomfortable, mm-hmm. If you will,
at the time cranky.
And we all go through that, which is most people, you're managing perfectly, but most people don't manage it that way. Most people, it shows on, and not necessarily just for critical illness. You know, how many young mothers they're working with, dealing with, you know, three, four different children, two mm-hmm. children. I mean,
they're sure exhausted.
Three to four now, but say two children, and you got a husband who's, you know, whatever the case may be, and they've got a job, they've got many responsibilities. That alone, you cannot expect that person to be at I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm giving the excuses to be, I have no idea. You can't expect that person to be at such a perfection level mm-hmm. that another person who is right. not in the same situation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now you add, God forbid, a critical illness on top of that. I don't know how people are still driving that image. You go on social media, you go on AI, you ask the questions, you go on social media, you see these perfect lives out there.
Ew,
bad. To be honest with you, it's BS. To be honest with you, it's all.
Right.
I was talking about something yesterday. We did a podcast on cognitive cybersecurity.
Mm.
That whole idea of image out there, it's all made for manipulation,
right.
in my opinion. It changed minds, changed hearts, changed societies. And that's where we are right now.
Right, right. And we do expect people to be perfect. And when they're not, it's like, what do you mean that person drinks or that person got a divorce or whatever? And then, of course, we love hearing the details. But I think one of the things, and I love when I see this on Facebook or social or wherever, when it's, you know, it says, be kind to that person because you don't know what they're going through.
True. True, you're right, because we only show to the outside world mm-hmm. what we feel the outside mm-hmm. world should show, mm-hmm. not the entire truth.
Right, right.
It's the tip of the iceberg, I call it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and it is okay to tell your friends it's not a good day or things. You know, I am very involved. This is so strange. I do dog shows. I'm very involved in volunteering for dog shows. So I was at one for 14 days. Now, that's a lot of different shows. But I would say, I'm going to my room. I'm going to go rest. Nobody will bother me. The world will not end, but you're going to let me have an hour. And every single one of them said, do you need 2 hours?
You know what? I love that because they gave you space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, if somebody's listening to this and happen to be a CEO, what is the one uncomfortable question they should be asking themselves after this conversation?
What would I do if? Or worse, what am I going to do if? Because unfortunately, the stats are pretty high, you know, that 1 in 4 people will have cancer. And so maybe it's not that the CEO has cancer. Maybe it's that they have a child that has cancer or they have a spouse that has something. And so what are you going to do if? Back to that succession planning, that business continuity planning, all those things, just know that something may happen. And so what are you going to do if that happens?
Correct.
And the funny thing that I come up against is those people in those white coats with those stethoscopes, we default to them. No, they're not in charge. You know?
That's right.
You have to be your own advocate.
Now, for the people that are listening, what would you like them to get out of this podcast with me today? What are you hoping for them to understand or to retain? Or perhaps you want them to reach out to you for connection, conversation, etc. What would you like them to do with this talk today?
The biggest thing is you are not alone. You do not have to be alone. It's okay to ask others for help. Sometimes the strongest thing that you can do is to ask someone for help. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's really okay.
I want to thank you so much. But before I close, I want to leave this with the audience. If leadership is responsibility, not identity, then planning your absence is part of the job. And I want to thank Deb Creer for joining me today. I really appreciate it. Deb, thank you for the conversation. Any last statement before I close off?
First of all, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. This has been such a fascinating discussion. And, you know, and it really has been so much fun. You know, I just really want people to remember. It's okay. You'll get through it, whatever it's going to be. And it might be 5 days, might be 50 years, but you'll get through it the way you're supposed to get through it.
Thank you, Deb. Appreciate it. Thank you for joining me. I really appreciate your time with me this evening. And thanks for taking the time on a Friday evening to be on this podcast. I'm such a privileged person to have you with me. to experience what you've experienced, to talk about it, to share it with others. And I hope others will listen, learn, contact you. If anybody wants to get a hold of Deborah, parentheses Deb, that's how she lists it on LinkedIn, Career, KR, and connect with Deb on LinkedIn. If you can't, Deb and I are connected. Just reach out to me and I'll make an introduction.
Thank you. And I'm the only Deb Career, so I'm pretty, and I have the red hair, so I'm pretty easy to find.
Very, very distinctive profile. I really love your profile. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And for the audience, thanks so much for joining me in on this podcast. Hopefully you liked it. Hopefully you can like, share, comment this content as we publish. And I really appreciate it. And I also want to make a couple of mentions. One is with every podcast I publish, there's a long video of the entire conversation that goes up on YouTube. Plus it goes on all the podcast streaming channels. In addition to that, I publish close to 25 different short, small videos, which they are the highlights of our conversation with Deb. They'll also be published on YouTube. Feel free to engage with those. And I also publish a Cole's Note version, which is a blog of the podcast, goes on my blog post on my blog site. It's called robinayoub.blog. Feel free to check them out. Feel free to reference other podcast series that I've done. And there's close to 260 of them now. So thanks again for everybody for listening in. Thanks for being on this journey with me tonight. And I'll see you at the next episode. Deb, hang on for a minute. Thank you, everybody.